This is the 13th of January, 1979, Santa Fe, New Mexico, and we're having a session with Bartholomew. Good morning, Bartholomew.
Good morning. And as always, my great love to my dear, dear friends to the South.
We were wondering if we might begin this tape with some comments on gratitude.
Yes, well, I asked you to ask this question, sir, because I feel that gratitude is something that should be clarified as far as the spiritual importance of gratitude is concerned. The one thing that I hear a lot between individuals on the earth plane is, why aren't you grateful to me, meaning to this other ego, or that person doesn't show enough gratitude, or I certainly wish you'd be more grateful to me. Or even unvoiced, but the inner feeling of, why isn't that person grateful for what I have done for them? All right, now I would ask all of you listening to this tape to take serious thought about that, because what it reflects is a very interesting observation of who you are and what you do. When you look at it that way and say, why is so-and-so not grateful to me for what I have done, this is what you are saying. You are saying that in some way, you as yourself, not as a servant or not as a channel or not as a co-participant, but as a prime mover, have created such events that have helped or aided or whatever this other person's destiny, and that they should in turn be grateful to you for what they have done, for what you've done for them.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now what that is saying is that you, if you are the one who should receive the gratitude, then you are also the one who is responsible and who should receive part of the karmic result. So if this is the way you want to view things, then by all means go ahead. I think it is something you should give some thought to. Because if you indeed are the one to whom the gratitude should be heaped, then just stand back and realize that you are also the one who will receive part of the residue of that choice. Now, if that choice turns out to be maximum and excellent, then of course you will receive some maximum and excellent karma. If, on the other hand, it turns out to be negative and difficult and deadly, then you will receive as part of your gratitude some very difficult and detrimental so-called negative karma. Now, all I am saying here is, think carefully about what it is you are saying when you say, I want people to be grateful. Let us say that someone does, in the world of today, there are an interesting phenomenon is at work and has been for centuries, which is the division between male and female. And this means male and female labor, male and female areas of expertise, male and female thinking. You know, all of this duality goes on very, and certainly the job situation is broken down into jobs for the men and jobs for the women. Now, when a woman does a job that is a man's job, she, interestingly enough, expects the male to be grateful. And if a man does a job for a woman, he expects her to be grateful. Why? Because they feel that they have crossed over a very definite line and have moved into the other person's area of responsibility, and they have picked up part of the responsibility and the efforts of that other sphere of interest, of influence, and have taken it upon themselves to carry out. And I say, all right, first of all, these are totally illusory boundaries. There is no, except for the giving birth of children, the actual process of giving birth to a child, I cannot think of any areas that are definitely male and female. After the child is born, the areas become very gray again, you see. So I realize that these are boundaries that you have made up in your minds. But to go back to the gratitude, you see, every time a woman does something in the other sphere and a male does something in the female sphere, what they really want is gratitude. I would like to say that from a spiritual perception, it would be greatly advantageous to almost everyone, in fact I will change that, without exception, to everyone listening to this tape, to move into the other sphere willingly, lovingly, hopefully, and with great knowledge that your balance and harmony is best met and balanced if you move into the other sphere. You know, there's great fear. Women have fear that they're going to become too masculine. Men have fear that they're going to become too feminine. All these what I call phony boundaries erupt in one's mind. If you were someone who bosses your wife around and uses her as someone to fetch and carry and take care of your needs, I suggest that you look carefully at what you're doing, because this is a very imbalanced way to live your life. And for someone, if you can fit yourself into this, it would be greatly advantageous for you to immediately drop that position to whatever degree you can and become the server, become the one who does the serving, become the one who takes the orders from the other. In other words, to switch, to really move out of your given rut and move into the other boundary. And the reason for this is that these ruts that continue through your life are, not only are there ruts and you dig yourself in deeper and deeper and deeper, but soon they're so high you can't see over them.
Mm-hmm.
Literally cannot see over them to realize that you're not in two different gulches, each one moving on your own way, that you are really, that what is in the other gulch is as much your need to understand as is the other. You see, there is, in the ultimate sense, absolutely no differentiation between male and female. There isn't any such thing. Since you are not a body, how can we possibly say that there is any difference between male and female? You are essence, you are source, you are spirit, you are light. Light does not have male or female.
Could I ask a question?
Certainly.
I know that psychics sometimes say that this is a male spirit and this is a female spirit. What does that mean?
Well, what they're referring to is that when you leave the body form and are still caught in the wheel of existence and still feel the need to reincarnate, oftentimes you will stay in the same body form as you were through your discarnate periods. In other words, certain people feel best in a female body, not in a body, that is not the correct word at all. They feel best with a female balance, being closer to the female, and that will manifest as a so-called female spirit on the other side. Some people are much more prone to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever you feel most at ease at is what you will gather towards you, the energies that are called feminine energies, and you will manifest those on the other side, and therefore you could be called a female spirit. And others pick the male. It's simply a matter of which you feel most at ease with.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you think is the better of the two is what you will. If you feel that the masculine is better, superior, then that's what you'll pick. If you feel that his female is superior, then that's what you'll pick. Rarely do you pick the one that would be best for you. You simply pick the one that you feel is best, you see, and it stops there. So all of these differentiations, as you pull free of the wheel, dissolve, and then you enter into another realm. You see, as we've talked about in the discarnate state, which I don't like to talk much about because it's really not relevant. But it is true that when you move into the so-called death state, that you will have a certain idea of yourself. And if your idea of yourself is masculine, then that is what you will carry.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's feminine, then that's what you'll carry. Now, many women are in the discarnate state are men. And the reason for this is that, as you can well see on the earth plane, the emphasis has been that the male is superior.
Mm-hmm.
And this is simple. In the discarnate state, there are a lot more men than women. Only, not because it's better to be a man, but because your earth plane influences you to such an extent that you feel that to be a man is to be freer, to have more opportunities, because this is true on the earth plane.
Mm-hmm.
As far as reality, it has no meaning. But that is the way it is set up in your mind, and therefore it manifests on the other side. You know, what you think here, you'll think there. You know, it isn't as if this great veil will rend itself open and you'll ta-da and everything changes, you see. This is not that simple, unfortunately. However, back to the subject, which is, I feel so strongly that the one wonderful exercise, if you want to break down barriers within your mind, is to start doing those things that you consider to be masculine or feminine. And if you do feminine things usually, then start doing some masculine things. And these divisions shouldn't be so clearly defined. Now, in the earth plane, I see a lot of this happening. People moving, men doing women's work and women doing men's work, and I applaud it. I applaud it. This is one of the great changes that's come about since the drug revolution,
uh-huh.
is that the men and women have perceived that there is no great division, and they have sought to make a balance. The men, on the whole, have done a better job of the balancing because they haven't picked up any banner and started waving it. They've simply started doing a lot of women's work, you know, without making a big event of it. The women, however, because of their down position, have chosen to make a big event of it. But nevertheless, I do not want to discuss the women's movement and
yeah.
so forth. That isn't really my concern. My concern is that there must be a balance, a harmony. A well-integrated person on the earth plane is one who sees that there is great need for both of these. For example, women deprive themselves of a lot of outdoor activity because of their emphasis on staying within the home. And yet, it is much more beneficial for people to be outside a certain period of the day, working, say, with the ground and in the air and with the movement of the sky and the sun beating upon them. This is a very beneficial thing that they have eliminated for themselves in their mind because of it being so-called men's work, you see, to be outside. And the men, on the other hand, there's a great deal of enjoyment to come to you from working with water, say, in doing the dishes and in doing the mundane, small, earthy things of making beds and pushing vacuum. And there is a relationship builds within the male with his home environment that makes him feel more at ease in it if he does such things within the home. Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, yes.
That the balanced person is at home in both spheres, and that they don't need to stay in one sphere or the other. And then someone says, but I feel best in the home. I don't want to be out there. And I say, well, fine. I'm not saying you have to run around changing things. I'm simply indicating that if you want to be an integrated person, you have to break down these boundaries in your mind. And if you have no boundaries in your mind, then by all means, ignore everything I've said. But I think if you're being very frank with yourselves and could look deeply, you do have these boundaries, and you are very covetous of your place in your boundary. You know, the gentleman is covetous of his area and the woman of hers. And if someone starts to infringe on that area without permission, oh my, oh my. You know, if a woman moves into a man's area and starts making, you know, doing what she wants, making changes or so on, well, he feels that he has to keep on top of it, that he can allow her to do it, but in some way he must keep control of it. You know, yes, dear, you can help me, but you must understand you're helping me, and this is your little area that you can help with. And that's fine. I don't object to that, as long as you're both attempting to break down these false boundaries. At the beginning, it will be difficult. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's
yeah.
simply a matter of wanting to eliminate all of these contrived boundaries. Now, let's go back to the subject of gratitude, which brought me to this, which is there is no need for the man to feel grateful to the woman for coming out and helping weed the garden, because she is benefiting directly from that. There is no need for the woman to feel grateful for the man for helping her with her household chores, because he is benefiting from that. When you yourself are benefiting, why on earth does someone else need to feel grateful to you? You know, that's a very strange perception. Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
That's a very strange kind of thinking. And so I would suggest that you give thought to what it is you're saying when you want someone to be grateful. For example, if you work for someone and you say, why aren't they grateful for me for doing my job? Well, you get your gratitude. You get a paycheck. That's what it's all about. That's why you're there. You're there to earn your money. You get what you want, but on top of it, you want some kind of a pat on the back and a hearty, oh, I think you're wonderful, and thank you so much for doing what you're being paid to do. And then if you do the slightest amount over, you want some gratitude. And I say, now look, if you want the gratitude, then by all means try and get it. You'll probably be thwarted, because it is not really the other person's best ego interest to be too grateful to you. You see, because if people are too grateful to others, well, then that puts their position in jeopardy, you see. They want to feel that others need to be grateful to them. Understand,
right.
Everybody feels that other people should be grateful to them for the great things that they do and bestow upon other people. And I say that if you want to really believe in that, go right ahead. First of all, it's illusory. And second of all, understand that if you really think that you have benefited and been the prime mover, then you must be willing to accept part of the karma, good and bad. Now, what is the way out? The way out is so simple that you probably will not take it, which is simply to every moment of your life, as you do anything at all, to understand that you are doing it as the doer, you are not. You do it, but as the doer, you do not do it. It is a power that moves. It is a power called life. Life is what does everything. And any amount of mentalization that you put on it as you doing this job for so-and-so and should receive such-and-such in return is all a great way of stopping the flow from really moving through you. What I would ask for all you sincere seekers is to really get into the feeling of knowing that you are not doing anything. And if you're not doing anything, this relieves you so totally of your responsibilities. You know, there's a lot of talk about being responsible, and I have said to you before, and I say again, the one thing you are responsible for is the choice that you make in your mind. Are you doing it, or is the power going to do it for you? Someone comes up to you and asks your advice. Now, this is a very informative way of finding out who you think you are. Someone comes to you and says, I need some advice. And you sit there and you think to yourself, aha, now is my opportunity. Now, what do you do at this juncture? Very important questioning. Do you get yourself silent? Do you call on the power to move through you and answer the person in the maximum so that that person can gain the necessary needful help, which is the only way they can really get help, is from the divine power who sees all the ramifications of the problem? Or are you going to answer from your limited ego so that you can feel very important? Because you see, there is a certain amount of feeling of importance that comes from being asked a question. And it's a very tricky area, very tricky indeed. But I would suggest to you that if you want to know how you sit with this problem, this is when you should do it. This is how you should pay attention. For example, all of you who are going to be involved in the center, and many of you will be involved in very gentle ways, you know, you will be aiding and helping and sending things up and so forth. And some of you will be working directly with it. But it doesn't matter where you stand as far as how much time you'll be spending. When it comes a time of asking, someone asks you, say the gentleman asks you, what do you think of so-and-so? Where do you go for your answer? If you go to your ego, then your answer is of no value, none, because you will have six people and you will have six ideas, because each of you has an idea in your mind. And that is not what is important. And those of you who say that the ego is not important and you're not interested in talk on the ego, I say to you, you are missing the point. Because that is the greatest device of the ego, which says, oh, don't worry about me, I'll just sit over here and be quiet and you can go on loving. That is not the way it happens. The ego must be seen clearly and you must understand all of its little ins and outs, and once you see it, you will begin to drop it. Until you see it, you will be caught. And you will simply be loving out of your ego and thinking, how grand I am. Mm-hmm. Look how loving I am. Why, look at this event. This person said this to me and I was able to respond in love. Aren't I wonderful? You have done nothing if that is your response. Nothing. Nothing has been gained. You might as well have said whatever negative thought might have arisen in your mind. It is far better to have allowed the negativity to come out so that you could hear it than to continue to delude yourself that you are still in a state of positive love. If you think you are loving, then you have failed, because you cannot love. It is not you that loves. It is not you that does any of this. It is simply your illusory mechanism that allows you to think that any changes of any great consequence come from whatever you might do or say. But I understand that you're caught in the illusion, but I simply put this before you, that you must be very careful, because the ego is going to constantly be trying to pick up the results of any of this work that you're doing within yourself. It is always at watching at maximum to grab for itself in some very subtle, sneaky way and take the glory for itself and become larger and larger and larger until you can become what I consider one of the worst kinds of illusory persons, which is the one who thinks he's on the spiritual path but is really serving good God ego. That is really the one. You know, great God ego is tremendously wonderful and loves to be fed and loves to act in great power on the earth plane. So be aware of who it is you serve. And the way you can tell about that is where do you go for your answers? When someone asks you a question, people ask you questions all the time. All of you are constantly being asked. Your wife asks you a question, whoever or your husband, or your friend, or your boss, or your the gentleman in the Safeway, or whatever, someone asks you, and where do you go for your answers, and how do you feel about it after you've given the answer? If you go over it in your mind and think about what you said and think, oh my, what a good boy I am, you've missed it. You have missed it. If you take that event and run it through your mind again and feel satisfied, you've missed it. Do you see?
Yes.
You have missed it. And many of you are doing this. Many, many, many of you are doing this. And I say to you, be careful, because you're not getting anywhere when that's the kind of response that you have. You're not getting anywhere. Until you get in touch with the power and know that it is the power that does all things, you're not really getting anywhere. And the way to do that, as I've stated over and over, is to continually turn to it, continually listen to it. Instead of listening to your own limited brain, listen to the source. Now, when you're listening to your limited brain and giving advice out of that quarter, you're bound to give limited, biased, bigoted, blinded advice, because you do not have the vision. You think you do. That is the tremendous illusion of the ego. The ego thinks it knows. The ego does not know. The ego does not know. It does not know. It does not have within it the capacity to seek, to see the deep oneness of all interrelatedness, and what is best for A is going to be best for Z. It doesn't know that. So it responds in a very short-sighted, limited way. And you say, but what does that matter? I mean, it's better to do that than to not give advice at all. And I say, no, I don't believe you. I do not believe you. If you are one of these people who continually makes decisions and gives advice out of the ego, then I say stop giving advice. Just simply, as a spiritual discipline, say, I don't know the answer to that, and allow yourself to suffer a little bit of humility, because you don't know. And until such time as you begin to really turn into the source and seek answers, you will be giving limited advice, and that kind of advice always has a bouncing back kind of a motive. It is not extension at all. It is projection. And projection always comes back to he who projected it.
Yes.
So you give out what you think is glorious, wonderful, uplifting advice. The whole thing turns sour, and that is what is going to come back to you, let me assure you. Those of you on the earth plane who love to give advice, my advice to you, which is a very ludicrous statement, my advice to you is don't do it. Don't be so anxious to give advice to others, my friends, of any kind. Please do not be so anxious. Of course you'll have to give some advice. But watch and see how often you give advice to others about even minute things. Have you done this? Won't you do that? Would you please do that? When you ask someone to do something, you're giving them advice. You're stating that there is an event that you think they should do. I mean, you may not couch it in terms of my advice to you is to go and do this and so. But when you ask someone to do something, you are asking them to do a specific thing. That is what you're saying. You're saying, go and do this thing. Your stamp of approval is upon it, you see. And it carries with it a responsibility. When you choose out of your own mind to talk and to direct, then you stand responsible. If, on the other hand, you release that and you move into the vastness and you turn your mechanism over and allow the vastness to move through you in speech and in thought and in action, you are not responsible. Now, those of you who like being responsible, by all means, just go right on. I have no quarrel with that. I'm simply saying, those of you who sense that there is a power that can answer questions better than your limited ego mind, I say, by all means, let us be aware of that and use it. Let's use that power that you now know exists. Those of you who are really doing what I have suggested know that within space there is power. Within space there is power, and that power can transmute anything. And so I suggest to you, instead of looking for gratitude, instead of giving advice, become silent and listen. We're back to where we start. We always return to where we start. Who are you? What are you? Are you a limited person, or are you a divine source? Make up your mind. And if you're a divine source, even though you don't experience that, if you think that that might be something worth doing, then start acting like it. And what does that mean? That means quit acting in your limited, arrogant ego selves and start surrendering the moment. Instead of speaking quickly, those of you who speak quickly to questions, beware, because you're the ones most likely to be acting out of your ego. If you have 10 and 15 thoughts on one thing, realize that they're probably all relatively unimportant. and they don't really carry any great power. The only people who can really help other people are those who know that they can do nothing, that of themselves they do nothing. They simply listen, and then they do their best to translate the feeling tones of that power into some kind of verbal word or physical action. Do you think I've covered that?
Yes, one more thing. You mentioned on an earlier tape that you'd like to discuss what is significance of trying to correct other people's behavior. Does this connect with
it's exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. Correcting other people's behavior is simply saying that your ego opinion is better than someone else's ego opinion. And I tell you that that is not true. All ego opinion is the same. All ego opinion is the same. It ends up being the same thing because it's illusory. Illusion is illusion. There isn't any such thing as a greater or a lesser illusion. Illusion is what it is, which is illusory. And so the more you try to keep your own illusion as the one that other people follow is the degree to which you enmesh yourself greater, further into the illusion, and you also pull them into it with you. The person who says, I don't know what you should do, my friend. Shall we be quiet together and see if we can't come up within ourselves, each to the other, supplying you with enough power so that you can come to your own understanding within yourself? That's a friend. And then, if that is not possible, if the other person is in such confusion that that is not a possibility, then the second, which is not the maximum, but the second is then you must then, if they continue to ask you, you can't walk away from it, then get yourself as centered and quiet and thoughtful and hearing as you can and do your best. And then be willing to take whatever comes. Understanding that this is a process. It's been eons of time that you've buried yourself in the muck of the ego, and it takes a while to pull yourselves out. And just as when your shoe is in the mud, it's hard, and the beginning stages are so difficult, but as it gets clearer and clearer, then finally there is a pop at the end and you break free of it. So is it in moving yourselves out of this. There will be a moment, an instantaneous moment, when you will see. But until that time, it's very hard work, and you have to keep trying and making errors and being aware of your correctedness and how you need to change things. But understand, don't talk so much. All these words, people talking all the time, signifying nothing. If I had one piece of advice for most people on the earth plane, is to be quiet. Too much talk, too much gossip, too much opinion, too much judgment, too much analysis. Just be quiet. Be still and know. It's in the stillness of your own being that you're going to come to the truths. It's not through talking. It's not through reading. It's not through incrustation of more and more data. It's not by bossing others or being the great knower. It's by being silent. It is so simple. It is so simple. But the thing is, in the beginning stages, to become silent is the hardest thing, because you have gotten yourself, as we've discussed before, in this incredible movement of the wheel, and the velocity is spinning and spinning. And to put a drag on that and pull that to stop is difficult. I do not deny that it is difficult. But I also say that nobody can do it but you. God is not going to put his hand out of the ethers and stop that wheel. You are going to, and you do it in stages. So if you find yourself talking all the time, mm-hmm. If those of you who are in the center find yourself talk, you're missing it. You don't need to talk to each other. Just sit in quietude and let other things talk through you, changing you, molding you, developing you, taking out what you don't need and putting in what you do need. Everything you need is given unto you if you ask for it. But you have to ask for it. And one of the things is you have to ask for the advice of how to help others. You don't know how to help other people. No one knows in the ego world how to help someone else. You simply make little jerky decisions that jerk along. It's like a car moving with its brake on. You end up burning up your engine, and the whole vehicle is rendered useless, and the person you're trying to take for the journey in your car gets nowhere. You know, you get nowhere, and neither do they. And then in the interim, you burn out your vehicle, and it's of no use, and you end up dead. And you die, and you've achieved nothing. So it's this kind of vision I would ask you to have in mind. Quit talking. All this mentalization, all these ideas. If you're given an assignment to do, instead of working on it on a million different areas, begin it by being silent and asking for the guidance of where to go, where to begin your search. It will come to you, as I've discussed in the previous tape. The idea that presents itself, that continues to have the pull for you, that continues to have an ongoing charge, is the one that will end up being the one that you should follow. Not the one that immediately responds, because that's probably your ego, but the one that over a long period, you know, of sitting of a half an hour, presents itself as the one, not in a mental state, but as in a vibrational state. The one that feels right after going through them over and over and over in your mind is the one that you should go on. It's not difficult, my friends. It simply means you've got to shift out of one view, which is talking and acting and thinking, into another view, which is listening and surrendering.
Very good. Would you like to talk in some general way about what people who are beginning to experience the psychic centers opening, what types of approaches they should be taking?
All right. Now this applies directly to many people listening to this tape. Many people in Socorro, I think of one in particular, two women in particular who are having very important changes taking place in them at this time. And I will make this as a general statement, and you fit yourselves in wherever you think you fit. As you begin to feel activity in the different centers, by that can manifest differently. If you feel energy coming in through your head, and you definitely feel that. If you feel energy building in the back of your neck, if you feel movement in what is called the heart center, if you feel movement at the base of the spine, if you feel movement at the throat center or between the eyes, the eyebrows rather, if you're experiencing energy force fields in any of these areas to any considerable degree, then this means that the process is really beginning, and then it behooves you to think about purification. And this is, of course, a terrifying word to some people, so I throw it before you with great trepidation, because people really like what they like and they don't want to give up what they like. So do as you please. I simply say that no process of clarity will come if the vehicle is in a state of impurity, only because the force and the source loves you. And to place that energy within you to any great velocity, if there's a lot of impurities present, will result in a physical breakdown. I don't mean a mental breakdown, I mean a physical breakdown. And the force cares enough about you not to allow this to happen. This is why, and I will go on record now and for always, that I do not approve of systems of yoga that attempt to raise the kundalini by force. The kundalini will rise in its own natural way, and someone will come to your life to teach you the actuality of how to do this at the time that this is a beginning experience for you. Either the voice within will guide you, or there will be a voice without that will guide you. But those of you who are trying to force the movement of the kundalini, I warn you, I give you warning, you are not able to know the degree of purification that your body needs. You cannot see this. And unexalted leader cannot answer this. So those of you, and there are many on the earth plane who are trying to do this, it is your arrogance that's pushing you. It is a natural thing that will happen as you become purified in your all of the various areas. And if you're listening carefully to what's going on within your body, you will know. Now, I am not saying that there are no great teachers of Kundalini Yoga. That is not what I'm saying. I'm saying that many of them are not great teachers of Kundalini Yoga. And can you tell? You can tell by the love in their heart and the clarity in their mind. If you don't like that person, and if other people don't like that person, then the chances are this is not the way for you, and you should move. Mm-hmm. Use your own intuition. It may be it's simply your ego. That's all right. It's simply telling you something. It's telling you that this is not the time or the place. Movements of the kundalini are very, very dangerous if they are not done in a natural way. And many of you will experience the kundalini in the next few years. And that in itself is only a beginning. It is not the exalted pinnacle or the end. It's simply one movement on a stage. So don't be too proud of yourself when it happens. In fact, if you begin to be too proud, you'll begin to misuse the energy, and you'll be back where you started from, only worse, because you'll have more power to misuse. So if that begins to happen, I would ask, if you care to ask for any of you who are beginning to experience any form of the Kundalini, I would be very grateful to have private sessions with you, because no universal directives are possible about the Kundalini. It is a private thing. I'll be very glad to be at your disposal at any time to give you guidance on that subject, about what you need in your own way. But just as a general term, any of you who are beginning, I don't mean just a little bit of activity, that happens to any meditator. Mm-hmm. I'm speaking of real activity, any real activity, any real movement, any real opening that happens to you. The first primary thing is to look at the purity and the purification of your body form, because it is your body that ends up carrying the force. So by that, of course, it's very obvious what I mean. Unfortunately, I mean giving up such things as coffee, tea. I'm talking about narcotic tea rather than herbal tea.
Narcotic tea?
Well, various tea. I don't know your term for it. There's a certain teas are much like coffee.
Yeah, I have a stimulant.
Right,
yeah.
And others do not. And the herbals do not have this. And
okay.
Is that correct?
I understand.
Fine. Cigarettes, alcohol, and drugs. And by that, I mean any drugs. I mean aspirin. Of course, any other kind of drugs, not just psychedelic drugs, not just consciousness-changing drugs. I mean drugs. By that I mean any kind of a chemical product that has been produced by the medical profession to do various change mechanisms in your body form.
Mm-hmm.
It is also very advantageous, for those of you who can, is to do hatha yoga at that time, because that is one way of smoothing out the jerky changes that take place. So those of you who are feeling various movements, I would suggest simple hatha yoga. I'm not suggesting great and dynamic and difficult asanas, but just the simple movements with a balance, making sure that you've set up a program that's balanced in its different forms. By that I mean as many of them going in a back, in the back sense of bending your spine in a curve backwards,
mm-hmm.
and then compensating by as many going in a curve forwards, having some lying down and some standing up. In other words, a mixture,
mm-hmm.
picking the ones that feel best for you. And I don't mean a great rigorous program of hours and hours. I simply mean maybe 15 minutes a day in the morning and 15 at night would be advantageous if you can do so. But it is better to spread it out and do 15 at one time and 15 at another. But if you can't, you can't. Do whatever you can. But those of you who really are beginning to have openings, you will, and of course you will say to me, but I don't have time, my husband would think this and that, and I say, all right, this is a choice. This is where you will have choices all the way along, my friends. There will always be a choice. Who are you going to follow? And if you try hard enough, you can find a way to get around all those egos who are trying to keep you where you've always been. You can find ways. You don't have to do it with fanfare. You can find a way, either early in the morning or late at night or during the day sometime when people are not around. You can find a way if you want it. And I would also ask, as you find yourself sitting during the day, instead of, be careful. Once you begin to have these openings, you will also realize that everything you do has meaning. In other words, everything you put in your mouth, of course, has meaning. But also how you sit. Many of you slouch a lot, and that is an outward manifestation of your keeping away from a straight spine. And a straight spine is an important part of this, and so the more that your spine is in a straightened state and your postures during the day are straight, the better off you'll be. Do you understand? Did I make that clear?
Yes.
The people who slouch should stop slouching. Because a slouch is a physical manifestation of various things. So I would suggest that to whatever extent you can to keep yourself straight. Seated straight, laying straight, standing straight. So this is just, of course it doesn't apply to all of you, but hopefully it will someday apply to all of you. That this is the time then of the choice of giving up one kind of product and taking on something else. Just remember, anything is right if it's natural. If it's in a natural state, you can rarely go wrong with it. This is why I say that marijuana is better than a psychedelic, because a psychedelic is not a pure substance, and marijuana is. Marijuana is far less hazardous than is any kind of contrived chemical substance. So always remember the natural state. Now, those of you who do smoke marijuana, and are continuing yoga and are continuing to meditate, I would say to you, beware. If you are successful in raising the kundalini and you happen to be under drugs, of any, in this case meaning marijuana or alcohol, should it happen at that time, I will not be responsible for what happens. You will move into areas of tremendous difficulty and I cannot help you. So I would say beware. This is a very deep warning. To those of you who really feel that activity is beginning to take place, you must begin to make your choices. Not out of any prudery or any feeling of superiority, but simply that you do not do something that is diametrically opposite to what you're trying to achieve. And although various side effects are pleasant in the smoking of marijuana, which I am very readily aware of, I also tell you that in the last, if you're depending on that, then please realize that you are taking on a jeopardy. And it's on you. Do not turn around then and blame the forces for difficulties that might arise. The two do not blend. And what, of course, you cannot determine is when the kundalini will rise. It can rise as you're walking down the street. It doesn't have to rise in meditation. It can rise in varying times and varying places. So, and if you ask me, which is a very logical question, can you achieve what we want without the rising of the kundalini? I say yes. It's just one form. But some of you are destined for that, and you should know these things. For others of you, it will not be the kundalini. It will be quite different. There will be an expansion in quite a different way, and that will be as varied as there are people listening to this tape. There are no rules. There are no rules. And those people who feel that the only valid thing is the raising of the kundalini, I will tell you the kundalini can rise, and you can be, in a sense, no better off than you were before. Because it simply is a matter of what are you doing. The kundalini rises at certain times due to various meditation devices and various yogic asanas. So it can rise, but it in itself is of no importance. It of itself is of no importance. What is of total importance is what is going on in your heart and in your mind. How do you view this? What is your real attitude toward it? The problem is the first attitude is usually arrogance and superiority, in which case it would have been better had it not happened, especially if it's a continued state of arrogance and superiority, which happens often. In some of the potentially great yogis in the world, this begins the downfall. And it would have been better had it not risen. But you see, it's a matter of forcing. And this is why I say I don't want extended yogic asanas. You know, if you have a guru who does this and whose job is to do that, and if you feel very definitely that person knows what they're talking about, then that's fine. I say go with it. But I'm speaking of those of you who follow other paths and who just do a few physical exercises. Don't go into long, extensive times because you can get things stirred up that are not beneficial in themselves. That is not the benefit. The benefit is not the kundalini. The benefit is the breakdown in the structure of your mind. That is the important thing. And it's just a matter of purifying the body. It helps to get some of the poisons out, move some of the blocks out so that you can carry greater and greater charge. And the charge will take you your destined route. No one can say what their destined route is. They don't really know. It will happen as it will. So don't feel that you must have kundalini. You know, that is not the answer. It is some people's answer, but it is not the answer. There is no answer. The reason it happens so often in the East is that the Eastern mind is predicated on that as being the ultimate experience. Therefore, of course, that's how it manifests. I tell you, we play the game as you prescribe it, you see. And in the Western world, you do not have this tradition. You have the opening of the heart through the love, and certain visual manifestations of the Christ consciousness and so forth. That is your idea, and the mind being emblazoned with light. That is a more Western understanding, and so that is how it manifests in the West. It is not a set down product that has to happen in a certain way, and people can get illumination in varying different ways. So don't put any kind of prerequisite on how you are going to achieve your own awareness, because you probably don't know.
Right.
And part of the joy is the surrendering of that. And letting it happen. If you decide, for example, that Kundalini is the way for you, and it really isn't, in some way it will take you, and by I mean it isn't, is it's not the shortest way. That means that you'll have to go through years and years and years of building a new thought form for the Kundalini situation, whereas perhaps your natural state is the opening of the heart in the bhakti tradition.
Uh-huh.
You see, you don't, you know, mentalization, it can be a great detriment. For example, you read a book, and the book states that such and such is the case, you think, ah, that's for me. Well, maybe it isn't for you. Maybe it's just your ego saying, oh, this looks to me to be the most interesting or the most exciting or the highest path, so I'll follow it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I say this is your mind. Your mind cannot answer. Your mind cannot answer. To the extent to which you surrender your physical vehicle and you surrender your whole journey over to the higher power, it will carry you where it should, and you need not make any such decisions. So I feel we should close this. Is it getting late?
Yes, it is. It is late.
And I feel that we should close this, and I'm sorry it's not longer, but I do have pressing business, and I sense that so do you. So with all great love to all of you, I bid you goodbye.